And welcome back. Michael Tesarian is back on the program tonight for another conversation. On Once Before, got a lot of very positive email, very intriguing, extremely well-researched and knowledgeable individual. He was born in Ireland. Tesarian is spelled T-S-A-R-I-O-N. He is an expert on the occult histories of Ireland and America. He has made the deepest researches into the comparative mythologies of the world and into his own country's ancient and very mysterious Celtic traditions. His presentations on Atlantis, Lemuria, and the pre-Diluvian epoch have been acclaimed by veterans in the field of paranormal research as well. He's the author of Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation. And Michael considers the consequences to civilization of extraterrestrial involvement and seeks to clarify many of the quandaries that other visitation experts have overlooked. In his forthcoming book, Michael Tesarian's research carries onward through time to show how, after the great Earth cataclysms, the Atlanteans and the Lemurians settled on new lands. Primarily, Ireland became a new homeland to those powerful magi known as the Druids, who brought with them the great scientific and spiritual secrets which the whole world would benefit from. The role of the Druids has been consciously obscured by official historians and religious cabals ever since. The time has come now for this all to change, says Michael, and those who have laid claim to the civilizations are imposters in the true sense of that word. It is time for the Irish origins of civilization to come to light. So let us shine some light there. Welcome back, Michael.
Yes, Jeff, it's lovely to be back with you again on your wonderful, wonderful show. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, thank you. Now, a lot of people are saying, come on, Jeff, what are you doing? Ireland, the cradle of civilization, as we know it today? I don't think so. But don't go away, folks. This is a man not to be brushed off lightly. This is going to be very interesting. I guarantee it. When will the book be ready, by the way?
Probably next year. I'm not in any hurry because I'm still working a lot on the Atlantis, the original book, the Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation. I've got a series of DVDs, six in all, that will be coming out, producing that series. There'll be a long-awaited accompaniment to the book on a DVD. So those are actually a priority, but this subject that we're talking about tonight, the Irish origins of civilization, is something that I have been interested in, you know, since my time in Ireland, especially since about 13, when I came across the work of Jim Fitzpatrick and some of the individuals in Ireland who were trying their best in their own way to revive this message. I mean, it actually turns out that it was 1873, and it was a woman, a female author, who had first delved into this subject. Her name was Anna Wilkes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was followed up at the turn of the century, that's between the 19th and the 20th century,
right,
by a great American master that everyone in America must know about. I mean, there's been so much suppression that even some of the great leading lights of this country, as far as authorship goes, are unknown to the masses of people. And I find that, even as a foreigner and a visitor to your shores, I find that personally unacceptable, you know. And Connor McDowry was his name. So Connor McDowry was in the same maverick research revisionist field as was Emmanuel Velikovsky and Commons Beaumont, you know, and people like that.
Interesting company.
Yeah, I'm just following on in their footsteps.
I think what we need to do also, just a brief aside here, the word revisionism has, of course, been smeared and discredited by a lot of special interest groups for a number of years now. We might want to come up with a new word and call it factualism.
I like that a lot because, of course, that's what we are talking about. We're talking about reality.
Correct.
You know, especially in regards to history. This is what this is where one of the biggest controls from the establishment has been, is with the subject of history, and many even writers of great fame have said that. Rousseau, Voltaire, they've spoken about that if a man can be removed from his roots, from his culture, and it doesn't matter if you're Irish or you're Jewish or you're, you know, Russian or whatever, if you have been, for any reason, natural or otherwise, removed from your culture, from your roots, then you are in big trouble existentially, and you leave yourself wide open to manipulation. This tidal wave of manipulation that tries to do that, you know, is very evident in Ireland. You see, in America, people are still pretty much asleep, and they don't know that it's happening here, because one of the reasons is the place is a big country. It's a huge continent.
When you say removing someone from his or her roots, what you're talking about is extracting the nationalism and national pride from that individual and his family history. Now, the whole idea, of course, in subverting the United States is predicated upon destroying nationalism and American pride in this country.
And more than that, it is, as you know, it is also to then replace that, because you don't leave a void.
Right.
Yeah, what you remove, you have to then replace.
And they're more than ready to replace it.
Right, with all sorts of liberalistic ideas and with consensus trance and with this political correctness and just with pure ignorance.
Now that's the New World Order.
Yeah, and it's very much in evidence, and my work is to expose its darker corners, because there's a lot of wonderful people in this country and in the world who have been doing this, but I find sometimes that, you know, they're painting with too thin a brush. This is an incredible mechanism or engine of deception that's been going on, and we need to look into the history, we need to look into religion, we need to look into the racial movement of tribes, because we've been sold a bill of goods. My job, for instance, when I critique religion, is not to invade the private space. Let's get that very clear. I am not a person who's invading the private space of the private worship. My trouble is with these, you know, establishments, these institutions of religion that have inserted themselves and their, what I consider, demonic Luciferian concepts in between the individual and their spiritual power.
Right, and they're also massive commercial enterprises as well. They're corporations. Religion incorporated, and we get into trouble also when one religion begins to claim it is superior to another, and that's been the case throughout throughout recorded history. We also, of course, are living in very, as you and I found out recently, I'm used to it, maybe you're not, but very dangerous and treacherous times of slander, libel, character assassination, impersonation. There are probably thousands of people working full-time or part-time on the internet now to disrupt, to cause friction,
to start
fights and all the rest of it, to thwart anyone who is seeking to shine the light on reality. And that's a full-time enterprise by the enemies of our Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
And they're specifically after those individuals who have not just a sort of a hit-and-a-miss type of accuracy when it comes to these revisionist subjects. They want the creme de la creme. You know, I look at you as being one of the people in America who has that, you know, pedigree, and therefore they're deeply worried about that. So if they can cut you back, and if they can molest you and degrade your character, that's what they're going to do. They know that the rank and the file, they come and they go. But the individual who has personal integrity, personal morality, and also has a sort of a checklist of who they talk about and who they have on, and it's accredited, and it's dedicated. It's dedicated to great concepts like freedom and morality. My God, that is a major, you know, plank in their eye, and they can't stand that one bit.
Right. Well, it's very well said. Thank you. I'm like you, doing my best, and like so many others, to bring forth reality. And we have to keep in mind that honest patriots in this country, honest American patriots, will not disparage, degrade, and mutilate each other. It won't happen.
No.
They realize they're on the same bus, same train, same plane, going to the same location, and that is reality. They're just sitting in different seats, but you don't turn and start fighting with someone next to you. It's absurd. So those who launch wars and cause fights, wars, and other kinds of friction are clearly working against the better interests of Americans.
And if they can't throw boulders, they'll throw dust.
That's right.
You know, whatever works. I mean, it's unbelievable how this adversarial energy works. It's, you know, you'd think that they go away when you've proven yourself immune a dozen times or 100,000 times, but hell no. They're still, they'd even throw dust in your way if it thought it would get you off your track for a moment, you know. It's incessant.
All too true. All right. Now, for those who are wondering, what kind of a name is Tsarion? Let's have Michael, he did the last time he was here, T-S-A-R-I-O-N. That doesn't sound like your average Irish name.
No, it's my mother was from the Himalayas, so as far as I know, that comes from their side, and them being a matriarchy, when my mother and father split up, then, you know, I just went back to that name.
That's a great name.
Yeah, it seemed to fit, you know, never thought of it. But that's where I think it's from. It's actually from the northern Himalayas. There's a city or a town up in Tibet that has that name or similar terminology to it, you know.
Interesting parents you must have had.
See, I think that a lot of my researches were born out of this, because there's an age-old controversy, and great scholarship has gone into these connections between the Hindu religion,
sure,
or the Brahmins, you see, and even from a racial point of view, who were the Indo-Europeans, was there an Aryan invasion? There's question marks about that. And what is the connection with the Celts? And these migrations have always been fascinating to me. And of course, growing up in Ireland, I was very concerned. It was very apparent to me that there was this diffusionism, that symbols that we find in New Zealand or in the Viking countries of Scandinavia, you see in Mexico, in North America, there's a commonality here. And this is very evident when you live in a Celtic country and these megalithic ruins and these ancient temples are there, and you can go and you can see it. You're literally tripping over them. I mean, in my work, I describe Ireland as a temple without walls.
Wow, fascinating. We'll get into this much more in depth now in just a couple of minutes with Michael Tesarian as we continue. Glad you're along tonight. Don't go away. Michael Tesarian. All right, Michael, lead the way. Let's go on a little trip through Ireland, truly an amazing country, no matter how you look at it.
Well, it's a very ancient culture. Scholars know that it's the oldest culture in Europe.
Scholars know, but most people don't. Now, that's right then and there, an amazing and rather auspicious beginning to a conversation. The oldest culture in all of Europe,
oh,
Ireland?
Yeah, that's absolutely irrefutable. Not only that, but it was, even from a Christian point of view, if you're within the Christian milieu, then it is quite absolutely known that it was the country of Ireland and the monks in Ireland that preserved Christianity during the Dark Ages, so that then when that Enlightenment came back, it was the Book of Kells and some of these illuminated manuscripts and the cult of monastic, the monks in Ireland had preserved this heritage even from the Christian point of view. So this is well known to clerics.
Fascinating. Well, they may be called to service again soon, because things are not looking too good. They may have to preserve what's left of this before we slip into the next Dark Ages.
Right, and my work is very much cognizant of that. The role of Ireland cannot be downplayed. The trouble that has been going on there, the incessant violence, the genocide, exactly the same genocide as you have in this country with your Native American Indians, has happened millennia ago to the Irish in successive waves. In my work, I believe that the famine, which, by the way, has never happened before and never happened since, I believe that was a planned genocide, that it was the fungus that infected the potato.
I read that somewhere, and whoever presented that argument made a lot of sense.
This is coming to light now. William Bramley in his book Gods of Eden talked about.
That's where I saw it.
Sure, yeah. He's very much, and there's other scholars who are now looking into this, because it stands out like a sore thumb. It was the desecration, the basically extermination of an entire race. But long before the potato famine, we have the Roman invasion. And do you know that the true story of what the Romans did? I mean, Julius Caesar fought the Britons and the Gaels and the Celts for 10 years in bloody battle. Horrific genocide took place there, because the Romans wanted to obliterate once and for all, completely exterminate the Druids. Otherwise, Christianity, as we know it, could not have risen today, because Christianity is nothing but the plagiarization and the plunder of Celtic Druidism, which was the prototype of Christianity that existed before. Druidism is the father, or the seedbed of where Christianity grows. But the attacks, the violence that has been done on that country is incredible, not just from the British, which we all know about, but there's been several waves of this. When St. Patrick himself arrived back in Ireland, he was barely there a year, and already he saw to it that hundreds of books of the Druids were completely destroyed in exactly the same way as Zamoraga and these characters did in South America. So just by looking at those minor details, without even getting into the whole subject of the desecration, we find that who is it who must be the lovers of knowledge in this game? Those who burn books and desecrate whole countries, you know, or these more earlier ancestors of ours who compiled this wisdom? It's well known to Irish and British historians that the penal laws, different countries like Australia have had these penal laws. The right. penal laws of Ireland are so severe, Jeff, that even the researchers in it, in criminality and criminal law, cannot even fathom it. Because we've heard about, you know, in the time of even Robin Hood and the Norman invasion and the certain restrictions that they would have over people. This was tame compared to the penal laws that were imposed upon the Irish people. People couldn't even pick up sticks on the Lord's land to, you know, build a fire in their own home. They could have their arms and their hands cut off for that.
Living situation, if you will, was imposed upon the Irish by whom? Successive conquerors?
Successive groups, yeah. First, like the Romans, and then you, as you move on, then the British crown was used. But the British crown were not just doing this of their own accord. They were controlled by Vatican. They'd been controlled by Rome. First of all, the English kings were sort of sympathetic to Ireland. It wasn't always a conflictual situation there. It was during Henry II, I think, in which the Vatican moved in and made it so that these lieutenants, that the royal families of England would become their lieutenants in order to suppress the Solar Stellar Church. The ancient Stellar Church of Ireland had to be eradicated because, of course, it was filled with the symbolism the Christians are using. The Judaic Christian system could not exist if everyone knew that the Druidic system, the Celtic system, you know, had the 12 disciples and the 12 loaves and all the idioms and customs that we associate with Christianity. Well, you couldn't have that thriving in little Ireland and then have your monopolistic religion, you know, working as you would want it. So the whole campaign there was to suppress Celtic Druidism in different successive waves. People today, tourists, they're forever going to Ireland and looking at these quaint cottages and saying, oh, look at the beautiful cottages and how, you know, the windows are so small and the doors are so quaint. What they don't realize, unfortunately, is that the reason why those windows were so small is that the British government taxed the air on the Irish.
Hard to believe.
Can you imagine such insanity which has existed on this planet? They taxed the air so that if you had your windows were too big, you'd be taxed to death. You couldn't even feed your children. This is what we're talking about here.
In summation, what the Irish did was nothing more than follow their codes of ethics and beliefs and morals. And as a people, because of the Druids, they were marked for extermination.
The Druids were in their own history. And even in commentary from the Roman historians, it is quite clear if you really read into it, and if people have read my first book, Atlantis, they'll know what I'm talking about. That, you see, just even you've heard of the luck of the Irish, right?
Sure.
This concept of the luck of the Irish, or the fact that Ireland and England were called the Blessed Isles or the Fortunate Isles, these names were given to it because these were the countries, the land masses that existed, that remained after the massive upheavals and pole shifts and floods that we had on this planet, that people like Graham Hancock now are absolutely confirming existed. Top scientists in Oxford and Cambridge have proven this. Alan and Dallaire in their book, When the Earth Nearly Died, the science is absolutely in for what the great mavericks like Velikovsky and Beaumont have been saying. Now, Ireland and England, you see, in fact, the Celts, they talk about four great continents of old that they came from. And they came to Ireland, that was their new homeland. So what we're talking about here when we're talking about the Druids is the old Atlanteans and Lemurians, the remnant, with all of that super technology and all that incredible knowledge and wisdom, connection to flora and fauna, that got reseeded on the land that we know today as Ireland, in what we know as Albion.
Okay.
That's where Arthurian legends and all of this history
Stand by right there, Michael. We'll come back and pick that up. Fascinating. Be right back in a minute. Okay, we're back with Michael Tesarian, talking about Ireland. What about the Druids? A lot of people don't know much about them, what they did, who they were. They were certainly a group of people, a name, in fact, which has been discredited, smeared, obscured, obfuscated for a long, long time. People in robes and hoods doing unholy things and dirty, unclean things. That's what most people think of when they think of Druids. They don't understand. So tell us a little bit about the Druids. And they did, by the way, not restrict themselves to Ireland. They certainly were represented elsewhere as well.
Oh, absolutely. This is one of the most important things to grasp, because, yes, you're right. When people think of the Druids at all, they're always focusing on Ireland itself, as if that was the only place. And, of course, they may say, oh, well, they may have got to Spain and France and so forth. But the real understanding that these individuals, another name for the Irish, one of the names that they referred to calling themselves was Phoenician.
Oh, now really?
Yeah, now that is not with PH.
Uh-huh.
Because remember, the people that I'm telling you about that have obscured all of this have done wonders with translating and faking and putting letters where they don't belong.
Right.
But the word with an F, F-E-N, Phoenician, or the Fenians,
mm-hmm.
These were also one of the names for the Irish people. So that turns out later on to be the Phoenicians, the famous Phoenicians that, you know, were the great power in the Middle East out there.
Yeah,
in
mariners, yeah.
Yeah, and the great traders. So, you know, we have the presence of these individuals that you're talking about, the Druids. Now, the word Druid is interesting. It comes from Druthin. Druthin, D-R-U-T-H-I-N. And that word meant the servant of truth. The servant of truth. So, and the motto that the Druids used was, in fact, truth against the world. So I'm thinking Jeff Rentz will love this one. Truth against the world, the druidic motto.
That's a pretty good statement.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
In fact, the D, down through when the word became anglicized, D's became T's, so it became Druthin. So instead of Druthin, it was Druthin. That's where we get our word truth. The word Druid is the origin of the word truth.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, and their motto was to be a servant of truth. And in fact, every ancient historian that you can think of, you know, all of the great, even Caesar, Julius Caesar, who was a historian, or Cicero, or Pliny, or Tacitus, all of these ancient historians from Rome and from the rest of the world absolutely report and agree that these people were literate, they had their own parliament, they were highly, highly sophisticated in celestial observation, they were astronomers, we know that. Today, you only have to go and look at the monuments that I was talking about earlier in Ireland that are still tremendously, aligned to the constellations.
Oh, the stone circles all over the place.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for, the word stone circle. Now, the head of the Druids was called an Olam, O-L-L-A-M, or often an Ola. And we get the word oligarchy from this word.
Oh, another fascinating word.
Yeah, originally, the word Ola meant the high ones. And it meant high because they were literally studiers of the sky, of the heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a fascinating, you know, people. I mean, these were individuals who did not permit themselves the luxury of cutting a single living thing with a sharpened edge.
Really?
Absolutely. They were the first solar cult. They were stellar worshippers. They had tremendous knowledge of the flora and the fauna.
Most people, excuse me, would associate animal sacrifice, maybe human sacrifice, with Druids, which have, of course, been folded into our entire history and cosmology of darkness and all the rest of it.
We have literally had not just 2,000 years of disinformation and mind control going on. We have had about 11,000 years of it, if you want my opinion, and I can prove that.
All the way back to Atlantis.
Yes. But even if people find that, you know, difficult to accept or whatever, and I understand that because, you know, without doing the homework, a lot of this is something that maybe, you know, does come as a shock to people. But so then let's start very simply. Everyone will agree that there are certain taboo areas that we are mind controlled in that we must not approach, these controversial areas. And they're basically three that involve, you know, people like ourselves. We're told never to look to prehistory. Because they're just going to tell you that the dawn of time was between 7 and 10,000 years ago. And even though that has been shot to pieces by academics of the highest level and even mavericks like Graham Hancock and others, we are still, the consensus is you do not look past to the pre-flood time.
Right.
Then the next taboo thing is you never question religion.
Oh, no.
And that's a basic. We don't even need to discuss that.
Right.
And the next one is this. And this is what this whole show is about and what my work is about. The third taboo that I think is very important is that we are told to never look to civilization spreading from west to east. It's always the reverse. If there's a thing called civilization, then we are told, without a single shred of scientific proof, I might add, that it moved from the eastern lands, from Asia Minor, from even Egypt, which was a wonderful high culture, I'm not denying that, But the whole idea is that from these desert plains of nothingness out in the Middle East, all the civilization through the 12 tribes and all this other malarkey is meant to have, you know, crossed into Europe and civilized all these barbarians.
Amazing. Yeah, it's true.
It's utter nonsense.
An immutable fact, and it's people just, it's almost genetic, really, east to west. You just used another druid word, didn't you? Malarkey?
I guess that slipped out, you see.
See? By the way, for those of you who do study history and have studied Caesar actually wrote about the druids.
Yeah.
I was just able to find a quote I saw some time ago. Caesar wrote that the druids, this is a quote now from his actual writings, know much about the stars and celestial motions, and about the size of the earth and the universe, and about the essential nature of things, and about the powers and the authority of the immortal gods, and these things they teach to their pupils.
Yeah.
End quote. They also, the druids, taught the traditional doctrine of the soul's immortality.
Look at that. You know, they held, there's two...
And also about reincarnation.
That's right.
They had it all.
But they taught two things. One, that there is a, like you just read there, the soul is immortal. Caesar wrote it himself. He said that when he got there, and they looked at this and they studied it, and the Romans were literate as well, so they could fully understand this. There was no confusion at all. The Druids taught about the immortality of the soul, and the second thing that they taught was that you arrive at, you know, your paradise, or you arrive at your reward after a life of integrity, ethics, and purity. Now, anybody, bring in a Christian cleric and a rabbi, and what will they say? They will say that Judaism is based on what I just said. Judaism is fundamentally based not on the belief of a Jesus Christ, you know, from sort of like a supernatural being or whatever. They say that Judaism is fundamentally based on a moral, pure life of following the Torah, of being disciplined and living a moral life. You bring in a Christian and they will say, our Christianity is based on the belief in Jesus and also the immortality of the soul. It's in Druidism. It came from there. The very foundation, even in Caesar's statement, gives you the, any neutral party who's open-minded can see that the seeds of the two greatest religions in the world are right there.
And you're going back thousands of years,
thousands,
not just 2,000.
The Irish, this whole concept was known in India. The Indians referred to the Britons, and when I say Britons, I mean B-R-I-T-O-N-S, Britons, which included the Irish. The Indians knew that country as the they called it the Britistan, and it was Britistan in Hindi meant the seat of religion.
Wow,
where the wise ones are.
Another amazing origin of a word. All right, stand by. We'll pause and come right back with the remarkable Michael Tsarsarian in just a couple minutes. Lots to think about. Okay, and we're back with Michael Tsarsarian. How about some more words? I love the word origin game. That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
You've given us oligarch. You've given us the word truth. Those are pretty impressive words to come from ancient Druidism.
The capital of Ireland was Tara. This is a word that has, you know, fascinated people for years.
And spelled?
T-A-R-A.
Oh, yes.
And that turns up as Abraham's father, as Terah, T-E-R-A-H. And for those who don't know, there's a consideration now that Abraham, in fact, and his father Terah were visiting from Ireland, that they were high druids. I know this sounds unusual, but this is the kind of stuff that's been hidden from the human race. It's not my business to throw out, you know, information that cannot be thoroughly backed up in a scholastic way.
Right.
You know, we have this kind of information out there. We have to understand also that words, as Conor McDarry and these great people who start looking into this, one of the reasons why they found out it was so easy to obscure the Druidic role was not only, of course, through this genocide I've been speaking of, but because of the manipulation of letters and words and language, so that the parent language, which originally was Gaelic. Did you know that the Japanese language, the Ainu language, and that Sanskrit, the closest derivatives that they have is to Gaelic?
No.
Yeah. The Japanese Ainu language, its closest, its closest sister language is Gaelic. And it's even thought by those who've really researched this that Gaelic was in fact a parent language of all the other languages of the world. This can, again, be is irrefutable
wow.
to those who know. Yeah,
no, that's pretty amazing.
But unfortunately, Jeff, the Gaelic tradition, the Druidic tradition was mostly an oral one. Those who studied a little bit of this know that the Druids tended to communicate orally and also through music and through ballads and through poems. And this, unfortunately, was one of the other reasons, you see, why it was so easy later on to obscure. They didn't write anything down. So they were a culture that was quite easy, after all said and done, to obscure and to annihilate.
Yeah. Too bad.
But to plunder. This is not.
They were too. They were too enlightened, too wise,
right.
And they couldn't protect themselves.
But the most important thing to remember, though, is that it wasn't just an annihilation in the sense that you take something from somebody and then you immediately destroy it. What happened here, why we're still talking about this thousands of years later, is because this canon, this archive, these treasures, were appropriated. It's like squatters living in the mansion. But you don't say that the squatter is the owner of the mansion. We might find individuals now draped, as we do, in the regalia and the symbolism, the clothes that are even worn by the Pope, all of the costumes that you see being used by clerics of both Judaism and Christianity have Druidic origin. Did you know that the original names of the 12 tribes of Israel are Gaelic names? Did you know that the descendants of Noah, that's Ham and Shem and Japheth, these terms are Gaelic terms?
No, nobody knows this.
Irrefutably. And all of their descendants, this is not just hot air, this is absolutely proven. But the problem is that the works of Anna Wilkes, the works of the great American scholar Connor McDowry, of L.A. Waddell, of Emmanuel Velikovsky, of Collins Beaumont, of all the list of the individuals who did their best to expose this in previous centuries, their work is exceedingly rare now. My job has been to try and bring it back to a modern time. Why? Because I believe, as you've said on your show many times, we are living now in a time of truth. There is resistance, yes, but there's other needs within the subconscious of people. There's other things happening in the world where truth is going to rise again and not be crushed to the earth. And part of this truth is our origin. The Scots-Irish tradition, for instance, is extremely important in an American context, not just in a modern way, but as your great American scholar Barry Fell showed, that he believed that the Anasazi Indians of this country, the people mm-hmm. who were put before us, you know, mm-hmm. those great builders in New Mexico, right. of these amazing right. things, they're Celtic.
Yeah.
I work with Glenn Kimball, the great archaeologist,
oh,
who
yeah.
has dug out the Ohio Serpent. He's bringing me photographs, and he's saying, can you please identify these, Michael, as Celtic? Because that's what we think they are. I'm going, absolutely, these are Celtic. Get your other experts onto it. There's nothing Native American Indian about these, and the American Indians have never denied it. You go to the Cherokee and you go to these Indians, they're always telling you that these were the white foreigners from across the seas.
Right.
They're absolutely not our thing.
Right.
What's
Glenn,
happened, America? Wake
yeah.
up.
Glenn has talked about that in years gone by on the program. He and others have done some amazing research.
Isn't it?
Some of the archaeological finds from cultures across the Atlantic, up the Mississippi, and I guess the Missouri River.
All over.
All over. There are literally hundreds upon hundreds of known sites, and maybe thousands altogether, where these relics are available and have been found. But, of course, they're broomed away by modern archaeology who doesn't want to deal with it.
History Channel and Discovery Channel are going to tell you that is Anastasi's. I'm sorry. It's a big mystery. We have no idea who built this. They just came, and they just disappeared into thin air. So they don't look like Native American Indian sites. The local Native American Indians go, hey, bud, we didn't do it. We'll tell
right.
you who did, but we
right.
don't listen to them.
No, I know.
We have a situation that also was perpetrated by the Vatican, and it's well known. And it was the flat world concept. If people want to know why there was actually this flat world concept, that they believed if you sailed too far, you know, especially to the west, you'd fall off the edge, that was a purposeful design, by the way, that
mm-hmm.
the Vatican created so that people would not, of their own accord, you see, fund treks out to the west, so that they might go to Ireland and find out what had happened.
Right. Rule by fear. It's always fear-based, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. So people believed that the land beyond Europe was this brooding, you see, devilish a smoky, misty place, and Ireland and England's history was off the map. Nobody even wrote about the history of those lands until so late in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason why the Vatican and the Catholic Church got behind migrations and travel to Americas is because people were doing it of their own accord. Independent merchant class people were funding ships, so they thought, we better get behind it, otherwise others are going to get there first. And that's the reason why Columbus was funded. Prior to the time of Columbus, it was considered taboo, completely off limits, to get into a ship and travel to the west, because there was such pathological fear that Ireland, Albion, Avalon, all of this mythical information of the Welsh and the Druids of Ireland, it was taboo. They hoped that this would never be discovered. They hoped that this corpse would be buried forever. And exactly what we have to understand is that the annihilation of the Irish Druids was the first crime that we can lay at the door of Roman Catholicism, and I'm talking about the institution here, not the religion, of the Vatican. This is a merciless, ruthless, we're not just talking about missionaries going out there and doing what they did, we're talking about the wholesale genocide, and it is the first of its kind.
It's also interesting to note how fear restrains and how greed propels the advance of so-called civilization.
Now, and you know something, Jeff? It's like I say in my work a lot. These individuals that are what we call the establishment or the Illuminati or the power brokers, whatever you want to call them,
mm-hmm.
and there are many terms for them, yes, they are deeply in fear. But the problem for the human race is that these individuals have combined their fear with occult knowledge.
Correct.
And this is what makes them lethal in the extreme. Therefore, why do I refer to my work as occult? Why do I talk about occult histories of the world? Because since our rival has combined his fear with occult knowledge, it is beholden to us now to know about occult or hidden things. We just can't walk around there, you know, blind. We have to now inform ourselves as to what has been hidden from us so that we are armed up and able to understand how deeply this tyranny against the human race goes.
And how little we know about our true history.
Well, it's true, but there's people like yourself and myself that are out there dedicated to bringing this knowledge to people, and I'm bulletproof.
I know you've done some amazing things, Michael, and you are tough as nails, no question.
That was living on the streets of Ireland. I not only had a first-class introduction as to how this game works, I was introduced to my destiny as to what to do about it. Because remember, in this world, as they say, freedom is never free, and silence is most definitely consent.
By our silence, we allow.
I agree. Absolutely agree. And the time has come to speak up. The time has come to love the word now. The word no. You know, I talk about that in my work. People have to love. We should fall in love with the word no. Be a rebel. Get up there and say no to these authorities and these individuals. Love the beauty and the power of that word, and you'll see amazing change in your life.
Here we are in an entire culture now in the United States where kids are being taught that no means, well, you're supposed to ask why.
Yeah.
No means no.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore, though.
Yeah.
Kids now, it's just an invitation for them to argue. Well, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Why? What did I do? Well, I didn't do that. He did that. She did that. They did that. It's not my fault. So no is something simply to be walked around. But you are 100% correct.
Well, not in my alphabet. I mean, my language.
I hear you.
That's the word of. See, no is the rebel. No, that simple two-letter word is the insignia of the spirit of rebellion. That spirit of rebellion is in a Christ-like person. It is in a Martin Luther King. It is in a, you know, Che Guevara. It is in anyone who stands up to the authority and says no, that causes change. We have become so tame that this fearful oligarchy, this plutocracy, who are shivering, they actually fear the human race like nobody's business, has been able to come into our streets and completely take over our life without a single shred of legal or sovereign right to do that. I keep saying to my audiences all the time, these forces of government and religion and politics do not come in and take over your power. You give it away to them. There is all the difference in the world between the two concepts.
Well, people forgot how to say no. You're right.
Yeah. Well, the time, you know, I believe very much that it's either do or die right now. The time is coming where you have to do that. We're going to have to, again, fall in love with that word, realize that, you know, there are these forces, they fear us, and they fear knowledge, but they're not going to win. The force that they're fighting is an eternal force, and we just have to have complete and utter confidence in that. This is what the Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, which was recently made into a fantastic series of movies, this is what it shows, that even the smallest, most insignificant person can absolutely turn the tide. But it means first that that individual may have to go on a journey into the darkness, the darkness of themselves, the darkness of the world, before they can absolutely conquer evil. Because all the armies of the world may not be able to do it, and in fact, all the armies of the world cannot do it. The army is one, and it is individuals having the bravery and courage to look at the darkness, not edit it out, and then say, hey, I want to live a beautiful, peaceful, harmonious life. Which when most people say that, especially those in the New Age movement, what they mean is, I just want to edit out all the ugliness so that I don't see it.
It is truly a withdrawal, you're right.
It's an escape of the worst kind.
Right.
No, the holistic person sees all the darkness and the light, the yin and the yang, and moves from there.
Very good, very well said, Michael. Stand by, we'll take our top of the hour break and come right back with more with Michael Tsarian. Okay, let's step off into our second hour with Michael Tsarian, learning some fascinating things about the Druids and the Gaelic roots, apparently, of an awful lot of our lost, strayed, or stolen history, as it were. Much of our history, of course, kept from us by the powers that be for a variety of reasons, and not the least of which, of course, is power and control. And Michael Tsarian has vowed to break through some of that darkness and illuminate for all of us some of the fascinating truths about Ireland. And this is all quite remarkable. Obviously, as we talked about in our first hour, the Romans were duly impressed with the Druids, as were others who came up against them. But they were, as I suggested, maybe too enlightened for their own good. They weren't warlike, bellicose, and weren't able to take care of themselves in a violent world, which we certainly haven't escaped in the interluding years. So, interesting.
Well, this is what was the legacy after the great pole shifts and the earth upheavals, that you did have these individuals who had been completely uprooted all over the world. All the empires that we know today are not original.
No, and every culture has at its base, as far back as you can trace it, a whole scenario of catastrophe.
Yes.
Everyone.
Yeah. And Jack Barringer and his book Past Shock.
Yeah, all of it.
There's 30,000, you know, texts that still survive talking about this kind of thing.
Exactly. Catastrophic history abounds on the planet. Now, you mentioned something also, of course, in your works, and you talk about it. And for those out there who have read Edgar Cayce and Cayce's book on Atlantis, which really comprised a very small number of his total readings, of course, but nonetheless is absolutely fascinating, talking about how the Atlanteans stepped across the boundary lines of morality, of playing God, of combining animals, human and animal, animal and animal, which of course is genetic manipulation, which is what we're doing now. The parallels between the end times in Atlantis and our times today, Michael, have always been rather shocking. And the more I hear about genetic manipulation, and we only know what they tell us, we don't know what's been going on behind closed doors and in darkened secret labs or lighted secret labs for a long time, is amazing. And the parallels are, I think, something to be taken very seriously.
Well, Edgar Cayce was a genius. I've definitely grown up admiring his works. Another one of the great Americans that is slowly being forgotten. But he was a very, very perceptive. He did talk about these things. My work on my book on Atlantis is just to fill in, to flesh out some of the ideas of Rudolf Steiner and people like Edgar Cayce.
Right.
And you're absolutely right. You see, there's an old saying that if you think it, if you've heard that it's bad behind closed doors, it's three times worse than you've heard.
Right. Good.
So I would take it on faith that there's all sorts of stuff going on that they haven't told us about. I keep my eyes very glued, you know, and I get people sending me stuff from all over the world, confederates of mine, you know, and people who are interested in my work, sending me the latest things that they've heard also on DNA research and genetics, and it's quite obvious when somebody actually pays attention.
Well, here's a perfect case in point. We see stories from time to time about head transplants.
Yeah.
Not face, total head transplants.
Right.
You can bet that this has been tried in the past,
sure.
And maybe successfully so, maybe 20, 30 years ago.
I hope my work has proved to people, you know, that this Frankensteinian stuff is millennia old. You know, by the way, on the website at taroscopes.com, we have a free web stream of my talk on the origins of evil. So if people are coming to this for the first time, we understand that. And we've provided plenty of sources for you. You know, we're not just shooting in the dark here. My particular website, be sure to use it. Use it as a resource. Go to the links page. Use those resources and sources there. We have free web stream of a talk that I did at ConspiracyCon last year on the origins of evil, which is, again, a concept that we have to understand is not Mother Nature's mess up, and it is not, you know, based in our negative relationship to God. This is, again, to do with the interference genetically and biologically in our being. And for those who are interested in this thesis, even though my book is not done, and the DVD on Atlantis, on the Irish origins of civilization will not be complete till next year, I have a lot of the points that we're going into right now on this show on my website. They just need to go to the astrotheology pages and go to page 2 of astrotheology, and there will be all the details and the, you know, the fuller expression of what we're talking about right here, Jeff.
Right. Okay, all right. So where do we go from here?
What do you mean, future-wise?
Yeah, what do we do with our lost Druid past, the Gaelic past? What are you going to do with it? Where
this
do you
is
go?
Very, very important, because we are about to see the great establishments, these power brokers, their order is actually falling. So when people are talking about the coming of a new world order and this draconian Orwellian order and shiver with fear and hide under the bed, which is the usual response, what we really have to understand is it's going to be the opposite of all of that. Not that the power brokers are thinking that. They obviously do believe that they're going to have total control.
They don't seem to be able to look at the world objectively anymore, blinded by whatever, their power itself, I suppose. But one merely has to look at the world objectively in its totality to see that what you're suggesting is quite likely to be, in fact, what's going to happen and is happening.
Of course it will, because this is not. First of all, this is not the first time that this kind of rivalry has happened. Secondly, this kind of rivalry is for a very important reason. It's part of the karma dharma situation that we find ourselves in. We brought it into being. As I said earlier, that anecdote about, you know, that there's no big brother comes in and takes your power, you give it away. Well, that is rooted in a metaphysical concept that should be familiar to a lot of your listeners, which is that the pathological person will create a pathocratic society. The schizoid person will create a schizogenic society. The paranoid person creates a paranoid society. In other words, the sick person creates a sick society. This is exactly what we're seeing. Then we may fool ourselves into believing that thing outside is affecting me. Well, of course, if you watch enough commercials, you know, especially from the ones generated from the FDA, you'll definitely believe that all disease is something external to yourself, and we're mind-controlled into that. But as a matter of fact, no matter how mind-controlled you are, the fact remains a fact that we, through our inner being, create any type of external situation. Now, these connections between the microcosm and the macrocosm, well, we don't know about those. We've lost those. Science couldn't be bothered with that. And we're not taught this stuff in school that is actually so elementary. Even Native American Indians and ancient peoples, the Indians, a lot of Native groups know these connections between the psychic world and the physical world. And they know that there's tremendous connections, so that what goes on inside the psyche of the collective, in exactly the same way that Carl Jung spoke about in scientific terms, whatever goes inside of you eventually manifests externally to you. So when you have these vampiristic leaders, and when you have these deceivers, and when you have this toxic, pathological, schizogenic, paranoid society, we must look within for the reasons to this. Now, this is not something that America really wants to hear, because it wasn't brought up on these kinds of metaphysics. And therefore, it has a knee-jerk reaction to this kind of wisdom that the Eastern people, perhaps, and certain individuals, the pure ones within the New Age movement, they maybe are, you know, looking into this and have a bit of a grasp on these facts. But unfortunately, the masses of the individuals brought up under 18 years under fluorescent lights in these kinds of state schools, and who haven't picked up a book, who couldn't even read the newspaper unless it was written in eighth grade, you know, mm-hmm. terminology. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the vast mass does not understand this principle that what you are within, you create without. So in my reading, and I come from a metaphysical background, so I'm sorry, this is my particular, you know, take on this thing. I am not so concerned with the external violence and wars and upheavals and draconian orders and all of these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
I see them, I understand them, but I know that their roots are within. They're projections of something that's happening in the inner being of people, and that is psychology, that is psychiatry, that is something that has to do with the inner nature of people.
Yeah, absolutely correct.
So yeah. You cannot have physical, social, domestic, and I mean domestic in your household. I'm talking right from the most pressing, you know, aspects of a person's life. They're domestic, they're relational, moving out to the social, moving out to the governmental, and all the way up the ladder. You cannot have hygiene and order in those spheres of operation until you have psychic hygiene within. It is simply not possible. Now, you said, how does this relate to the Druids and so on? It relates to the Druids because the Druids were shamanic tradition. It is the shamanic tradition that tells you or instructs us as to how to go about this psychic cleaning. If you murder, massacre, desecrate, and kill off all of these individuals, the witches had the same fate, the Gnostics mm-hmm. had the same fate, the Essenes, the Cathars, the list goes on and on and on. And if you wipe out all of these people from the world, then you're not even going to be able to take care of the earth, and you're certainly not going to have the principles by which an individual, a man, comes to moral purity and hygiene. We don't have it.
Right, it wipes out the knowledge, of course, not
yes,
just the people.
And all of that cleansing that is needed. Now, of course, we have been lucky in a way. We compensate a little bit. There's a New Age movement that tries in its own pathetic way.
Yeah, but I think we have to go back to what you said. Much of that entire movement is really concerned with withdrawing and dropping out,
right.
Not correcting and fixing.
Which I have now noticed myself, and I completely agree. I was hoping that wasn't the case before I came to America. I was very optimistic about it, but I have to give a thumbs down to most of what I've seen, with very few exceptions. The Bruce Liptons of the world, you know, and a few others out there.
Just had Bruce on.
You have.
What a genius.
Marvelous. So yeah. It's definitely there. The truth is there, and the great ones are there, and they always will be. But the 80% or whatever, you know, still has been
so
escapist.
Same thing with the environmental movement.
Same thing happened. Well, first of all, they're infiltrated. Let's understand.
They're taken over, bought off, and all the rest of it. Sure.
But the fundamental fact is that the Druidic teachings or the shamanic tradition or the Brahmanic tradition or the original Tantra traditions, whatever proto-organization of true Gnosticism you go to, they teach one law and one truth only, that man is his own priest and woman her own priestess. To hell with all external authorities. You may need them in the beginning for some steadying action, but you certainly don't need them like a child the people who do the Tour de France do not need the stabilizers on their bicycle.
Gotcha. Okay, stand by. Well said. Michael Tesarian, and we'll continue in just a few minutes. Okay, right back with Michael Tesarian talking about Druids and Druidism. Fascinating and little understood by most Americans. Just not something we have a common working, even rudimentary knowledge. If the average person were asked to write about Druids and Druidism, you might get a sentence out of them if you were lucky. It's just that kind of a vacuum, which Michael Tesarian is filling admirably tonight and has been working so hard for a long time to do that. We don't know much about Druidic practices, as Michael has talked about, but it is basically felt by most scholars in the academic community that they were somehow conserving repositories of culture and lore. It is hotly debated about what they were conserving. Was it ancient history before their time, or was it something of an innovative nature that they had come up with? But Michael's work points to a much, much earlier origin of what they were conserving. And these people were, if you will, a living cultural library of something ancient, something very important, and something obviously extremely enlightened, which we would do very well to study with a more open mind as a culture. And that's what Michael is all about. Go ahead, my friend.
Well, the Latin term for the Druids was the Magi. So when you hear about the Magi visiting the Christ child, you know, again, let's understand what was being spoken of here. The word Magi doesn't really mean anything to those who don't research what these words mean. The word Magi refers to the Druids. We have to also understand what you just spoken of, that the Druids were archivists. They understood that their origins were thousands of years back. That's how they happened to have all of these incredible developments. They had their own parliament, they had their own laws, they knew everything there was to know about astronomy.
And it threatened the Romans?
Of course
it did. And it threatened everybody else.
So you were not...
here's this utopian society.
Absolutely.
And they had to be exterminated.
Absolutely. And the old name for the cultures that they arose from, we know as Atlanteans, Lemurians, some of the poetic writers, early historians used to refer to that time as the Hyperborean, meaning it just meant extreme north.
The Greeks talked about the Druids as well. I mean, this was big news back
then.
Well,
the Greeks are descended from the Druids by way of the Etruscans. Here's another big lie that's been perpetrated in the world. They tell you that our first alphabet, and not only that, but our entire
Etruscan
culture,
alphabet, right.
Yeah, but our alphabet, our culture is Grecian by way of the Romans. What mm-hmm. they don't tell you is that the Greeks couldn't put it together themselves. They themselves were merely disseminators or broadcasters mm-hmm, of mm-hmm. knowledge that they had received from Etruscans. And you know why there's so little known about the Etruscans? Because the Etruscans were connected to the Celts. They were one and the same people. The Phoenicians, the Phoenicians, the Mycenaeans, the Minoans, the Etruscans, and the Hellenes. When you talk about Hellenistic culture, meaning
uh-huh.
Greek,
uh-huh.
the word Hellene means the shining ones or the enlightened ones. Hellenistic culture has the same word root as the Celts. The Celtic word for the Irish, it wasn't with an I-R, I-S-H. That is a later anglicized version. The Irish originally was A-R-I-S-H, Irish.
Oh.
And mm-hmm. Ari, or the Irish, is the original. If you insert a Y instead of the I, you get the Aryan. And the Aryan means the noble ones, or the enlightened ones, or the illustrious ones, or the worshippers of the sun. It had nothing to do with race. So when you say the word Aryan as confused by the Nazis and has been completely taken out of context,
right.
It had nothing to do with race. Just in exactly the same way as the original word Jew did not have anything to do with the race. These refer to a company of peoples, a cult of individuals who worship the same kind of deity, who operated the same way and had the same outlook.
Mm-hmm.
That was what the word Aryan meant. It could be anyone in the world from any race or any language. We have been taught to divide the world and to understand these things by way of language and also by race. And this is wrong. In ancient times, people did not distinguish themselves like that. They distinguished themselves on the kind of moral purity that they had and also on the veneration, the deities that they worshipped. So if you were a stellar cult or lunar cult, you see, that's why you still see on Islamic flags today the crescent moon and the star, betraying the fact that once upon a time, this was a lunar cult you were talking about, worshippers of the moon.
Hmm.
The ancient name of India was Sindh. S-I-N is the ancient name of the moon. All the Brahmins and Hindus originally were mother goddess worshippers who worshipped the moon. In Celtic Ireland, they had the Aryans, who went all over the world, and they were mostly sun worshippers, but also worshippers of the stars. So we have something here. But I want to emphasize what you were talking about earlier on, is what is the meaning of this for our times now? We are talking about the Druids of history. But the Druids of history, as I'm saying, saw every man and woman as a potential Druid, as a potential Christ, as a potential enlightened one. So the message that we take from this kind of thing is to forget about these institutional things. And also, by the way, in case anyone's listening, I'm not telling you to run off and get on some website and join some druidic order.
Neo-druids.
This is, you know, another subject, and we'll leave that aside for now. I am talking about the original central tenet of the religion of the Druids, which is that each individual is a shaman. Each individual has a responsibility for what happens in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You can run around with bows and arrows and with placards and try to fix it in the political pigsty that Big Brother has created for you. If you want to keep on doing that decade after decade, please go ahead. But there is another way to combat this kind of toxicity and this kind of devilry in the world. And that is to deal with your own house. As the real Christ said, you know, the God is within, and the whole message was to heal thyself. Right? This is the message of this has been lost. Carl Jung, Sigmund Freud, Wilhelm Reich, they tried to bring it back. They went blue in the face trying to tell us how to do it. Did we pay any attention? No, we didn't. Ayn Rand came into is the light of America, this incredible philosopher, tried to warn people about what was happening to the state of the self and how altruism was wiping over the country and liberalistic ideals that she had already seen in operation in Russia. Did we listen? No. You see, we are not in a healing situation because we have just totally not listened to those who have been trying to assist us in this process.
We are certainly not in a healing modality, that's for sure. Stand by, we'll do our break and come right back in just a couple minutes with Michael Tesorian. Back with Michael Tesorian. So the ancient Druid masters represented clear and present danger to the more primitive, if you will, military industrial complexes of those days, with the Roman Empire most notably, and they were just targeted and basically eliminated. No surviving documentation at all, none. All that we know basically is anecdotal, and from what Julius Caesar wrote about them and others. And he did write about them. Here's another little quote from Caesar. He said, "The principal point of their doctrine is that the soul does not die, and that after death it passes from one body into another."
That's
so there
it.
You go.
Fantastic. I have a quote here from another woman who wrote on this in the 1960s called Isabel Hill Elder, and she says that far from these ancestral Britons, and as Bretons, having been merely painted savages roaming wild in the woods, as we have imaginatively been told by modern histories, they are now, on the contrary, disclosed by newly found historical facts given by Professor Waddell, known to have been, from the very first grounding of their ships on the shores, over a millennia and a half before Christian era, a highly civilized, literate race, the pioneers of civilization. So we are talking about our ancestors here, not some remote, you know, fanciful thing on sort of cartoon time. This is our ancestors. We cannot inherit the future unless we look to our past and find out who we are. We have been systematically and gradually disconnected from our ancestral roots. I am talking about the Irish, but the Irish, A-R-I-S-H, as the Aryans were the seed of all culture, we have to get to grips with this movement of culture and civilization from the West to the East. Now, it's very strange, isn't it, that the Druids, who specialized in an oral tradition and who sponsored the minstrels and who sponsored the fairy tales and the folklore and the legends, today we have the same message coming back to us in the folklore of our time through music. One particular instance I can think of is Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin.
Oh, yeah?
He wrote the lines in the song Stairway to Heaven. You know, there's a feeling I get when I look to the west.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he's talking about the piper. If we all call the tune, then the piper will lead us to reason. So we have a minstrel tradition that is still in our existence today. In Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, there's a mention of the men of the west. You know, so we have a situation here that's being taught to us back. The Hyperboreans, or the Atlanteans, were referred to in Tolkien's work as the Numenoreans. So anyone who's picked up that book and is looking into this man's work, he is referring to the same people, just in veiled language. He's speaking about these individuals who are our ancestors, but more than just racial or ethnic ancestors. These are our spiritual ancestors. I am not concerned with some mediocre, you know, tracing back of our ethnic or racial roots. That is of no interest to me, that kind of genealogy. It's fascinating, I know, but we're talking about meta themes here. We're talking about the spiritual forefathers, the spiritual shamanic tradition, that if we don't find out what it was, and not, and I don't mean in this bogus, as you were saying, bogus New Age way, which has had plenty of time now, 30 years to get on the track, and it hasn't done a very good job.
No, in fact, it's going in the opposite direction.
Sure it has. It started
off, and it's been co-opted and commercialized.
Precisely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And, you know, it's the bane of my work to have to even be associated with that kind of milieu, but there you have it. You know, one has to speak to the audience as you find them. But I'm finding in this country there are the Edgar Cases, and there are the Glenn Kimballs, and there's people who go there and see with their own eyes that something is not right with the history of this world.
Not right. It's
this culture.
It's upside down and backwards is what it is.
It very much is. There's a fantastic quote by Conor McDarry, if I may read it. It's not very long.
Yeah.
He wrote a book called The Bible, which is an Irish book, and it's a very hard to find book, as you well can imagine, because it's very controversial.
Mm-hmm.
Conor McDarry says that Christianity came from Judaism. This is acknowledged by churchmen, but it never has been truthfully divulged before where Judaism has had its origins and its home. Or who were the Hebrews and the Jews? The term Hebrew and Jew for deceptive purposes has been conferred upon a people of Aramaic race, and is a misnomer to call this people the modern so-called Jews. So what Jews and Christians have to realize is that they have been given stamps, they have been given names, they have been given titles, and they've been given ethnic identity to which they do not belong. First, no rabbi will ever debate what I'm talking about, because all rabbis understand that no Jew living today can trace their ancestry back further than the 17th century. To talk about that any Jew living today,
that's it,
to have their origins back to the Holy Land, the so-called, is a total preposterous historical fallacy, and very few people will ever now make that statement. Because
well, we know the Khazars adopted Judaism in the 9th century.
Precisely.
A.D.
My next point was going to be that, and more so. If we even were to doubt my first statement, then we find out with a little bit of research, and by the way, this is research from Jewish sources, like Arthur Koestler and others, who absolutely tell you that 80% of the Jews living today are actually converted to Judaism as a religion and have nothing racially or ethnically connected to the Holy Land. So our point is this. Anyone can convert to any religion. Tomorrow I can go and convert to Baha'i religion. Tomorrow you could go and convert to Judaism. As millions of Jews have done. They are Jewish by conversion.
Right.
This is a completely different world of study and understanding than to say who are our progenitors.
Well, it becomes religion of convenience.
Exactly. But what we have to understand is, I'm not saying for people now to say that this threatens your religion. No, of course not. What you stay worshiping what you do. The Jews have a fine, upstanding religion. I am now saying find out the lie that has also been perpetrated on you, that your ancestors have been disguised. Do you know about your connections to the pharaohs of Egypt that is now suddenly coming to light through the works of Lawrence Gardner and other fantastic writers? Do you know about your connections to the Irish Druids? Or do you want to continue thinking that all the world is separate and that you're just a separate group over here and the Christians are just divided over here? Is that the world that we want, or are we ready to discover the intimate connections that we have with many other races?
I know. It's so sad to watch this compartmentalization and how one group, whether it be Christian supremacists or Muslim supremacists...
But you know something, Jeff? I say to your audience clearly, and I hope that they put down everything they're doing and they listen very carefully to this. If people are not willing to then put aside these differences, then do not talk to me about fighting the Illuminati or changing the world status quo, because the world status quo operates by a divide and rule plan.
Always has,
scheme.
Always will,
right.
Using organized religion as its primary tool of oppression and extortion.
You got it, my friend. And I'm telling you that works in a little country like Ireland, to be torn to shreds, that people are totally lost since the 1600s and before. If it works for a little country like that, it'll easily work for America, or it'll work for the entire planet. If you cannot look to your synthesis as to why, where you come from, what your origins are, and what your kindredness is.
Nice word.
Yes, to everyone in the world. Why did the Arthurians? Why is the King Arthur's table a round table? Because no man is head. It is the company of all. And that means even the rivals, even the enemies.
Right.
We have to sit down, put it all, like Lieutenant Bo Greitz has said many times, if somebody is shooting at you, you better arm up, and you better find out who is this, you know, threat that is shooting at the human family. Because if there's anyone listening in the reach of our voices who doesn't know that we are being shot at as the human race, my God, then there's no waking that
Indeed.
Kind of person.
All right. hold on, and right back after a couple of minute break with Michael Tesorian. It's almost as if Western society has lost its rearview mirror. No one's looking behind anymore to study and learn and try to really extract from the past knowledge and wisdom which would allow us to circumvent many of the terrible crises we've been facing. We just have not learned from history. And that's, of course, no accident. It's being done to all of us by design. We're being pushed forward faster all in all. Every time we look around, there's something new technological being thrown at us. And they are way ahead, as Michael said, and as many have said. They're ahead of us 10, 20, 30, 40 years.
And yet...
They let it trickle down, and they tease us, and they torment us, and they extract money from us, and they keep us playing, and they keep us diverted and misdirected and all the rest of it.
And yet, what every single thing that we have said, and a great deal of what you have also spoken of with other guests, anything that comes under the heading of alternative history or these occult matters, is taught to the elites that control us.
They know.
The masses may not know this, but I can tell you that the game is well into all the facts that we can discuss, or we can sit here for till next year talking this. Every part of this is known to the Freemasons, the highest Freemasons, I mean, and these other cabals.
And of course, I must always give credit where credit's due. Jordan Maxwell was the first one to really open that door to me, and he is a master of this line of study, as are you.
Who do you think it was when I got to this country? Stood up on stage and, to my absolute amazement, said to his audience, "Christianity comes from Celtic Druidism." It was Jordan.
Well, there you go.
It stunned me. Here's me, a man after my own heart.
Yeah.
What's his number? You know.
Yeah.
Now here, I mean, you're talking about people not looking back in history. We may be historically amnesiac, but you see, history is in our life whether we like it or not. The reason why
history runs our lives whether we like it or not. We just don't know it.
The person who's writing on a page from left to right is doing so because he lives in the Northern Hemisphere, and that used to be a mimicry of the sun's movement across the sky.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody, you know, refers to the leaf of a book, turn the leaves of a book, that term comes because of the Druids, because they used to actually write on the leaves, and their whole alphabet was based on the letters, based on the trees. The 13 sacred trees of Ireland is the basis of the script. So that is where we get the term leaves of a book. The Jewish term rabbi, which is teacher or holy one, mm-hmm. is a word that is Celtic from Abari, A-B-A-R-I. And it was a druid called Abaris, A-B-A-R-I-S. People can find all this information on the website. It was Abaris that traveled from Celtic Ireland to the school of Pythagoras. And Pythagoras in his own writing says that it was through instruction of the druidic colleges, and particularly through this traveling druid, mm-hmm. called Abaris, the rabbi, that the Pythagorean schools of ancient Greece began.
Wow.
This is historically documented.
What amazing people.
These teachers had colleges all over the world that the Egyptians, the Etruscans, the Minoans, the Cretans, the Brahmanic people from the Far East all came to Druidic colleges originally, all over the world.
Hmm.
Now, on those same sites, just like the Library of Alexandria was burned down, all of these colleges were systematically wiped out with the extermination of the Druids. And on those sites, physically, if you go there, there's Christian churches now. All the round towers that were in Ireland, these beautiful observatories, which had temples in the bottom, and then up at the top, they had astronomical observation towers with telescopes and the whole works, all were removed in Ireland, and then churches were put on them so that the people would still come to their traditional places of worship. But now it would be this patriarchal, very much dumbing down kind of religion, which is still in evidence today.
Right, right. Wow, fascinating. How many artifacts and relics are left of Druid culture?
In Ireland, a lot, if you know what you're looking for. Because of the taboo of going there, even though there's enormous desecration, because the people today, like the farmers who own the land, have a little bit of fear and superstition, they tended to leave a lot of the relics behind, and still they wouldn't tamper with them. So luckily we still have enough. We have a place called Newgrange, for instance, which is older than the pyramids, and people like Arthur C. Clarke and Graham Hancock have thoroughly checked this amazing phenomena out. So the oldest megalithic site in the world is not in Egypt, it's in Ireland. People have noticed about Stonehenge. Stonehenge is perfectly aligned geometrically.
It was also partially reconstructed in the early part of the last century.
All of these were, and they were also tampered with. For instance, the great stones that are the foundation of Newgrange were systematically removed. These are quite ginormous stones. They were actually taken out and turned around because they had elaborate cosmological leitmotifs about the fall of Atlantis and the hybridization and the sacred languages. So what happened is that these hundreds of stones were actually turned inward. So if you go and visit there today, you just see these blank stones, whereas on the other side facing in. Can you imagine the kind of debauchery that these modern historical enclaves from Trinity College in Ireland have done? They suppressed the Gaelic language till it was almost eradicated because they didn't want it to be understood that this was a parent language of the entire globe, the entire world. It just, in my work, you know, again, I refer people to my website, go to Astrotheology, page 2, because there's something here that we need to know about that is very, very important to understand the kind of antiquity of this New World Order. It's not something new. We think it's about to be leveled on us. Yes, in an American context it is, because unfortunately the Americans have fallen fast asleep and the wolf is at the door. But America is a relatively new continent, a new social...
It's a flash in the pan.
Right. It's a very modern country. And unfortunately it's teetering on the brink of extinction right now.
Right.
But this totalitarianistic kind of besiegement on the people of America is an old story to us over in Ireland and in Europe. There's been a whole monopoly of knowledge of history that needs to be understood because it has context to this country, because in this country the Irish were here first, and that was proven by Barry Fell, who was ridiculed his whole life, and his books are, you know, very difficult to find. Another genius American scholar that most people don't know about and will never be taught in the schools.
Well, we should also mention Michael Cremo's work.
Absolutely, 100% agree with that. I know Michael, we've had many conversations about this. And again, the science is in. I refer to these scientific works in my own works, and when I do the DVD and my book on the Irish origins of civilization, all of these scientific verifications and evidences will be shown. There's another book, for instance, on the archaeology of the Middle East that's just come out by a fantastic professor of archaeology, and he wrote a book called The Mythic Past, The Myth of Israel, and he is a Thomas L. Thompson, and his book is referred to on my Astrotheology pages. Right now, you can pick up a book that tells you that everything that we hear about in the Bible that says that this civilization and this culture was seated in the Middle East is total fiction. It did not happen. That's provable by archaeology. Of course, in the world of belief and superstition, we believe it. But in the world of evidence and science, there's not a shred of evidence for it.
This whole thing of religion on the planet has been nothing but horror for people.
Isn't it really?
When you think about it honestly, the death, the suffering, the destruction, the rape, pillage, annihilation, all done in the name of someone's god or gods.
Yeah.
It's just absurd.
And everybody believing that their particular slant on it is right.
And it's okay to kill because our god says so. And on and on. We're not going to make it, Michael, unless we cast off. Technology is blowing past us so fast now. Americans don't have a clue about how fast the world is changing. Literally in this century, it's estimated by some that 20,000 years of progress, if we survive, will visit us in the next 100 years.
But see, Jeff, I am myself not an enemy of either science or religion, and I know you're not either. My particular critiques and thesis is always based on this, that science and religion, science and spirituality must work together. The smart people on the earth know that and have been doing that. My contention is with who is using religion and science, which are neutral. Who is using these for another agenda? Who's using corporate symbolism in order to dumb down our youth and make them delinquent and just walking around like zombies?
How do you awaken intellect in someone when it's dead? It's not there, never developed, stillborn, however you want to phrase it.
You have to diagnose each situation individually.
It's an individual rehabilitation project. At some point, if someone comes along, fortunately, in someone's life who can help them out of the darkness into the light of intellectual viability.
If the passion is already there. If the passion is not there, and you're not, if you're not asked the question, then don't bother your ass.
No, I agree.
You know, the time is too short. But if the question is there, then by all means, you know, like what I do through the books, DVDs, websites, then it's natural for me to, you know, disseminate the knowledge that I've learned and that fascinate me. It's just an extension of who I am.
You've been fortunate to find your passion, and you're doing it magnificently. Anything, we've got just a couple minutes left, Michael. 2012, the Mayan calendar.
Yeah.
A lot of talk about that. We're already seeing books with 2012 on the cover and the title.
I have a DVD coming out in January.
Okay.
15 hours long on the subject.
Anything in your work with the Druids and ancient Celtic past that substantiates this 2012 thing?
Of course it is. They're talking about, like the Greeks did, that cycles come and go. There is historical phases, rhythms, that certain civilizations arise and then they fall. I can refer people to my latest article. It's right on the front of the website. And it is talking about the Age of Aquarius and the future of mankind, and it deals with this subject. And the basic answer to your question is that all thinkers and philosophers understood that history moves in cycles. What we're receiving at 2012 is not the end of nature, and not the end of time itself, or these objective phenomena. It is the end of the way that we have been living. I am all for it, because the way we've been living is not life.
No,
so I have no
not.
Worries about it at all, and I emphasize what I said in the middle of our show. Those individuals who are psychically clean and who are ethical and moral and haven't been living at the cost of another person have nothing to fear, because only the fear-mongers and the people who are dire inside, the individuals that I talk about on my Origins of Evil discussion, these individuals who are just rotten inside, they're the ones who have something to fear from what's coming. 2012 is a watershed. It is a moment where the kind of life that we as a human race have been living ethically, spiritually, economically, militaristically, socially, those patterns are going to fade out and come to an end, and we'll have another kind of life after that. And we are now in the countdown situation to that. 2007, in my astrological work, I always talk about this. In 2007, we're going to start to see the countdown, the beginning of that. Actually, if you're really intuitive, it's already been happening.
I already noticed it myself.
Exactly.
Michael, we're just out of time. This visit, you'll come back again. It's always a pleasure. You have a magnificent mind, and your study is just extraordinary. And I thank you for sharing it.
But a single individual, without the radio shows like yourself, what if the airways are dead? Then how good is the message? So I have people like yourself to thank for believing in what I do.
Thank you.
And giving me that platform. Thanks a lot.
Okay, my friend. Talk soon.
We'll talk again, brother.
Okay. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Michael Tsarian. And find your passion in life. He's found his, and see how fascinating it is when someone is really doing something they believe in and pour themselves into. It's wonderful to hear. All right, we'll be back in 21 hours.